Welcome back to season two of Snubs and Dubs. We've been talking about the snubs and dubs of the 87th Academy Award for Best Picture. I'm your host, Kyle Tobiasen, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Jason Miller. Jason, how are you doing today?
Marvelous, Kyle. See, the word marvel's in the start of how I'm doing, because this is the Marvel episode. How are you?
I'm doing good as well. My cat decided to throw up on my bed last night, so I had to throw out a whole ass blanket.
How come that followed good? That followed good, like that was a positive thing that you're reflecting on. Like, man, I'm doing great. Cat threw up in my bed. Yeah. Hell yeah, it was sick.
I mean, it was sick.
Okay, so you know what? Checkmate. You routed me on that one. I concede the point.
Well, did you see any other movies this week?
No, I did not. No? Haven't been a movie boy this week.
That's okay.
How about you?
I did do a little bit of movie watching. Last week, I mentioned how Molly and I finished season one of Demon Slayer. We watched Demon Slayer, the movie Mugen Train. That's
is that
title.
The title?
Yep.
Mugen Train, is that what your cat did?
Yeah, I guess it's like the manga works in arcs, and so this is the Mugen Train arc.
Oh, it's like it's a variant of this manga. Yeah. Is that what I said? Well, oh, as it with a tone of understanding, like I did, but I don't.
Yeah, it's just like it is an arc from the ongoing anime or manga. So it was good. Yeah, I think if you liked the show, you're gonna like the movie. I didn't.
What if you don't?
Then you probably won't, actually. It kind of feels the same as the show. It had like it's a contained movie, so it kind of moves at a different clip than the season. Season has a lot more slower points than the movie does, but I did still feel a little bit slowed down during the movie at times. So yeah. It wasn't amazing. It got such a high review on like Rotten Tomatoes. I think it's like 90-something%. So a lot of people loved it, but I was just like okay with it.
Yeah. Did it kind of like mislead you going in, expecting some kind of gold bar on the screen?
Well, maybe. But I just like I thought that it would maybe like boost my enjoyment of the show.
Oh yeah.
And like maybe kind of propel me with more excitement into the second season, but just kind of kept my expectations at the same level. So yeah.
Interesting.
But I also watched mostly Marvel stuff. So
yeah.
This was actually kind of a big week for Marvel stuff. Of course, we watched the two Marvel movies we're going to talk about, but I also finished Moon Knight season one or the end of the series, whatever they're going to do. They haven't announced season two yet, so it might just be that. But it was good. I don't know if it was my favorite Marvel show. Oscar Isaac is really good in it. Like that, he's definitely the standout. The fact that he can make like different personalities of himself feel like distinct characters and you forget that it's just Oscar Isaac playing two different dudes is pretty sweet. But I didn't find it as impactful as some of like the other shows, like WandaVision or Loki or even Hawkeye. But I have a soft spot for Hawkeye, so that might be on me. But yeah, it was good. It was fun. I think
Oscar Isaac's just really good.
Yeah, he is.
He's just a good dude.
Yeah. And I think it's good if you hadn't started watching it to watch it now that it's kind of complete, because I found the week to week was maybe like a little bit drawn out.
Yeah.
And so now that you can watch it all in one is probably a better way to do it. And I might actually rewatch it as one just to see if it kind of flows together better that way. But yeah,
I mean, that happens with some shows. They just move too fast in their own contained unit that having that huge lag time in between kind of just kills the momentum.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm excited to see him in other stuff too, because Moon Knight is a really, really cool character. So the last thing that I want to mention that was new, I watched Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness last night.
Wow. How was that Multiverse of Madness?
It was good. Also, not my favorite Marvel thing. I was really impressed with some of the chances that they took. They really went out there. They definitely used that PG-13 rating. I was actually surprised as to how much kind of like violence and gore they could go could actually go with. And I had heard that it was a little bit more violent and a little more shocking and even scary at times for Marvel going in. And so when I walked in with a family of like 6 to 11-year-olds all attending this PG-13 movie, I was like, oh shit, they might leave.
They had an awakening.
Yeah.
But also that's on the parents. They were parentally guided to not bring their kids to that. And they decided to anyways.
And they also decided to leave. They did leave. I was kind of like keeping an eye on the theater at some point. And sure enough, out of the corner of my eye, the light of the hallway opened and I saw a bunch of kids leaving the theater because it was actually, I wouldn't blame the parent for leaving because I wouldn't probably not want my child seeing some of the shit that happens in this movie.
I wonder if they like scoffed or tutted before they left. Like, I can't believe this. And then got up and left.
Maybe
it was just like a kids were going like a curt, a short. They know they don't have an argument here. Kind of leaving.
Well, the thing is like most Marvel stuff is PG-13.
It's all very open and friendly to families.
Yeah. And that's the thing. It's like you'd think that PG-13 and friendly for families isn't like the same thing. Mm-hmm. Like friendly for families to me is like PG or G.
Or G. Yeah.
And like PG-13 is like, okay, well, now we're getting into the stuff that might be a little bit
we might get some cleavage maybe. We might get some blood going on.
We might get a single fuck.
We know they're due for one somewhere, but how do they use it?
Yeah. And so like I think it's going to surprise a lot of parents, especially when they go to this movie, especially after the expectation of every other Marvel movie being pretty safe.
Yeah.
Just like with a little bit of violence. But yeah, like it was good. I just think it was a little bit clunky at times. Like, it didn't flow in the same way that some of the other tighter narratives did. I mean, I was comparing it to the two that we watched this week, which are both very good. And so, yeah, it just didn't land in every direction, but I appreciated the chances that they took. And I liked that they went in a kind of a different direction with it.
What would be like the required watching material going into this? Is WandaVision a necessary stepping stone?
Yes, definitely. Mm. Which I think a lot of people coming out of it will complain about WandaVision because you do have to watch it.
Yeah.
But some of Wanda's character development from WandaVision to Doctor Strange the Multiverse of Madness doesn't necessarily track.
Okay.
Because, yeah, I won't get into it.
I mean, that's kind of like the Iron Man arc where he does the same thing most movies.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And so I think some people might be annoyed by that, but I really loved what they did with Wanda because I loved to see it, and I love Wanda and Elizabeth Olsen.
Oh
my God.
My God. The things Elizabeth Olsen's done for men of our age, for anyone, really everyone.
Yeah.
Any age.
Yep.
Everywhere.
Yeah. All at once.
Elizabeth Olsen does it for that general audience of every human being who's laid eyes on her.
Yeah. But there was one last thing that I watched, and it was kind of related to the two that we were talking about, because this is a big old mid-season Marvel episode, but we're only talking about two Marvel movies. There were two other Marvel movies that came out in 2014.
I
guess if you count Big Hero 6, there's five.
Oh, okay. But you didn't.
Yeah.
Good.
But I did it because we already talked about it.
Yeah.
The other two were The Amazing Spider-Man 2.
Oh.
I did not rewatch that, but that's one of the worst Spider-Man movies, so I didn't really consider. And the other one was Days of Future Past.
Right.
X-Men. So that one we're not talking about in this episode or in this season at all. Sorry, folks.
Or ever. What movie?
And it was probably a good thing because after leaving last week's recording, I asked if you had seen it before.
Yes.
And you haven't seen like any X-Men movies.
No, it's just like a whole blind spot in my general movie watching experience. I think I've seen random ones.
Yeah.
And like not in any particular order. Like I've seen some of like the older run, like the Phoenix one I saw.
Oh.
Just that one of that series.
No.
I didn't watch Logan, but I did watch Logan. Just Logan, though.
That's a good one to watch. Yeah.
None of the other Wolverine ones. And then I watched Apocalypse.
Why do you watching the two worst ones and then Logan? Like one of the, I just, okay. Well.
Apocalypse sucked so much.
Oscar Isaac.
Yes. He was really the only redeemer. Well, yeah. Even he wasn't that great in all honesty. Yeah,
he looked like a Power Rangers television villain.
He looked like a crap.
He looked like the cat's puke that was on my bed. But no, Days of Future Past is a really good movie. Mm-hmm. But it does kind of depend on you having, I think, nostalgia and having watched not only First Class, but the first three X-Men movies as well. Not like any of the other X-Men movies, but like definitely those ones, because it does combine the two casts, young and old. It's really good. I don't know. I think I always forget how good it is because it's kind of buried behind these two.
Yeah.
And from this year, because when you talk about this year, like obviously these are two of the greatest Marvel movies in the MCU, in my opinion, and I think in many people's opinions. And so when X-Men Days of Future Past also came out in this year, and it was still good, but it was just not in the whole grand scheme of the universe, which was kicking off at this point and like post Avengers, it's just kind of got buried, I think. And
yeah,
but like it's still very good. And I think in a quieter season, we definitely would have talked about it, but this is too busy of an episode already. So, all right. Well, season two of Snubs and Doves has been covering the films from the year 2014. And so for episode 14, wow, we are going to be talking about both Captain America, the Winter Soldier, and Guardians of the Galaxy. Have you seen these two before?
I've seen them both before, both in theaters, and particularly Guardians of the Galaxy, a lot. You and I had a competition of who could watch it in theaters more.
Yes.
I'm pretty sure you won that. But the numbers we were putting up were not rookie numbers. These were seasoned vets on a heater kind of numbers. Yeah. We watched this in the theater a lot.
Yeah. And these were like two kids on summer holiday after high school. And so we were like, we were ready and had the time to watch all these movies.
We also worked at a mall where it was very easy to wander to the theater as soon as your shift was done. So we've seen a lot of Guardians of the Galaxy. Yep. I've only seen Winter Soldier once. You've probably seen it more than that, because you said you've watched it a lot as well.
Yeah. I think in terms of my rewatch, I've seen the Winter Soldier about as many times as I watched Guardians of the Galaxy in theaters, which is a lot. But then I would go through and I would rewatch everything before like a big movie. So like when the Avengers came out, I watched the first, like it was like eight at that point. So it wasn't a big deal.
Yeah.
But then got to Age of Ultron, I rewatched everything else again. And then when it came to Infinity War, I watched everything again.
Wow.
And then even though it was only a year away, I would watch everything before Endgame again. And so I haven't done that since Endgame, but that's only been I guess 3 years now. And so
I just imagine your mind is like the opening Marvel sequence where it just flips through the comic books. Yeah. That's your mind flipping through every still from all of those movies.
Yeah. I do remember going to Guardians of the Galaxy, though, because I was in Kelowna and me and my sister went there on like opening night. It was Thursday and we just went to like the theater that was nearby and it was on a whim. Mm-hmm. And then the next day we were like, two of my parents were like, oh, you should go with us. We should go. We got to see this movie. And so we went the next day. Within 24 hours, we saw it again. And then I came back in here and saw it a bunch of time with other people. And it was good times.
I think the most impressive thing about our rewatch run is I never went alone. I always had someone else there.
Yeah, that's good.
So I didn't stack the numbers.
I think I did go alone at least once.
Disqualified.
This was like the only one that, I'm talking about Guardians though, that I watched more than twice in theaters though.
Yeah.
Most of the MCU movies I'll see at least twice. I think Endgame I saw three times and same with Infinity War. But Guardians was the only one that I saw more than like twice or three times. Mm-hmm. And I think it's going to stay that way.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't have that time commitment anymore. I'm not like that fucking guy in the States that watched No Way Home like over 200 times.
King.
Oh my God. That's like twice a day for like 4 months.
I'd like to reiterate, King.
When was the last time you watched any of these movies?
I have not seen either since theaters.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah. I'm not a big, I didn't feel the need to rewatch a lot of Marvel movies. Going to other Marvel movies, they kind of keep you up to speed enough, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's totally fair. I just get a lot of enjoyment out of it.
The last time you rewatched these movies was 20 minutes ago.
Yeah. Yep. But no, before rewatching for this time, the last time I saw either of them was leading up to Endgame. So that was 2019.
Yeah. That sounds right.
Yep. Well, if you were interested in Guardians of the Galaxy or Captain America the Winter Soldier, I've included the links to the physical media related to it in the show notes. If you buy through those links, it'll help out the show. Or if you have any other Amazon shopping to do, follow the general links to help out our show in the process. A reminder that this is going to be a spoiler-filled conversation, so if you haven't seen these movies yet for some reason and you want to, go ahead and do so. They're on Disney Plus. But without further ado, we're going to start with Captain America and then do Guardians. So I'm going to start us off
with Kyle.
Captain America.
Hit it.
Captain America, the Winter Soldier, was directed by Anthony and Joe Russo. This was their first Marvel movie, but they went on to direct Civil War, Infinity War, and Endgame after this. So
they were given the reins.
Yeah. Same with the writers, Christopher Marcus and Stephen McFeely. Marcus and McFeely are Marvel frequents, having written Captain America, the First Avenger, Thor, the Dark World, both prior to the Winter Soldier. But then after the Winter Soldier, they wrote Civil War, Infinity War, and Endgame. However, I read in a fact that Chris Evans and Scarlett Johansson wrote a lot of their dialogues for their scenes together.
That makes sense because they are their characters at that point.
Exactly. Yeah, this would be like their third time playing it, which seems low, but that's,
I guess this is the reverse of method acting, where they don't need to stay in character. Their characters have become them. Yeah. They are Black Widow and Captain America.
Yeah. I mean, now they're dead, but yeah. What?
I'm pretty sure I've seen the movie since then.
I'm talking about the fuck. You son of a bitch. All right. Well, this has a pretty stacked cast. It stars Chris Evans, of course, as Steve Rogers / Captain America. Scarlett Johansson as Natasha Romanoff / Black Widow. Sebastian Stan as Bucky Barnes / The Winter Soldier. Anthony Mackie as Sam Wilson / The Falcon. That's where we end the slashes. Colby Smulders as Maria Hill. Frank Grillo as Brock Rumlow. Emily Van Camp as Sharon Carter. Haley Atwell as Peggy Carter. Robert fucking Redford as Secretary Alexander Pierce, and Samuel L. Jackson as Nick Fury. I like how I did the fucking for Robert Redford instead of Samuel L. Jackson.
Instead of Samuel L. Jackson, the man who is most famously fucked.
Yeah. But it's just, it was, I think, a shock for me and a lot of people at the time when Robert Redford decided to be in this movie, because we all thought he would be above it, but no.
But no, he's in it.
And he's great.
Yeah.
All right. It has a runtime of 136 minutes and it released on April 4th, 2014. Jason, what did you think of Captain America, the Winter Soldier?
So we're going to be moving through these at a bit of a clip because we're doing two movies in one episode, which is unfortunate in a little bit. Because I was kind of cold on the Winter Soldier going into a rewatch. I don't know if I accurately remembered it, but I wasn't loving it when I was rewatching it. It was something about it just didn't click for me. What did you think of Captain America Winter
Son
Soldier?
Of a bitch.
I know. That's the best fucking movie. Kyle, put the bat down. Kyle, I'm sorry.
No, I fucking love this movie. And I'm sorry. This is where, like, yes, I've been, you know, I could be criticized as being a Marvel fanboy, but when it comes to this movie in particular, and also Guardians in a sense, but like, this is where I fucking like thrive. Like, this is my shit right here. I love everything that they did with this. This was the moment where, for me at least, and for a lot of people, I think, where Captain America became my favorite Avenger. Mm-hmm. Whereas before, like, he was kind of like, you know, he was cool, but, you know, maybe a little bit boring. Everyone's favorite was Iron Man. But this movie, he fucking kicks ass and it's so cool. And I love how they went into like kind of a spy thriller thing as well. And yeah, sorry.
That's okay.
I fucking love it. But I have a brisk little plot here.
All right. Hit me with that plot.
Almost didn't need to look at the Wikipedia to review. This was even pre-watching. I usually do my notes before watching the movie if I've seen it before. This was off the top of my head for the most part. So it's here we go. Okay, so basically 2 years after the Avengers, Steve Rogers works for S.H.I.E.L.D. with Black Widow and a bunch of other people. S.H.I.E.L.D. is building a big-ass helicarrier, actually three big-ass helicarriers that can kill people before they do bad things. And Steve is like, nah, that ain't right. Mm-hmm. Turns out it surely ain't right, because surprise, Hydra lives on within S.H.I.E.L.D. and is doing bad shit. They used brainwashed Bucky Barnes as a Winter Soldier to attempt to assassinate Nick Fury, which apparently succeeds until it turns out that he faked it to lose some heat. Steve and Nat recruit Sam Wilson, aka the Falcon, to help them out, and they manage to sabotage Hydra's attempt at killing all the cool smart people that triggered them. While this is happening, Steve tries to save Bucky from his brainwashing, but takes a beating and nearly dies, but Bucky finds it within himself to save Steve and disappear. In the end, both S.H.I.E.L.D. and Hydra are no more. Nick Fury goes into hiding, Natasha goes off to do some spy errands, and Cap and his new BFF Falcon start on the Bucky hunt. Post-credits also gives us our first look at Wanda and Pietro, but yeah, that's it.
Oh, wow, that was a really... that plot was brief.
Yeah. I mean, come on. Like, if... I feel like people have seen this movie. I'm making assumptions, yeah. But people have seen this
Definitely
movie.
People have seen this one, because it's a required stop on the way to Endgame.
Well, yeah.
Like, both of these, you have to get to Endgame.
Yeah, definitely.
But this was, like, main series, mid-stride. Mm-hmm. This wasn't, like, an introduction where sometimes you get skipped. Like, I never saw Black Panther because it was an introduction. I don't know why I didn't see it, but never watched it.
Okay, that's fine.
So, yeah, people have definitely seen this movie. I think it is, like, regarded as one of the better of the Marvel series.
Yep.
I was kind of bored by the action.
Okay.
A lot of the action scenes just were too long. Mm-hmm. Like the scene where Nick Fury is getting chased while he's driving around was way too long. It's just shaky cam and cars driving.
Yeah.
You didn't need all of that.
I will say, like, they do use the shaky cam Bourne style of action quite a bit. Yeah. And like, it kind of works because it is type like a Bourne type action spy thriller movie. But yeah, like sometimes I did notice it and I definitely look at this movie with rose tinted glasses. So
yeah, like I'm not going to knock it for using shaky cam because it does work. But every action scene just kind of dragged on a little bit too long, which I think works a lot better in a theater. I am going to couch my criticisms in the fact that I enjoyed the shit out of this in theaters.
Yeah.
And I think if I had rewatched this in a theater, I'd have a better time with it,
right?
But watching at home, I'm not looking for the same things because it's not like this giant movie attention grabbing
like at you. Yeah,
exactly. It's just some images on a TV. So when like Nick Fury's just driving between cars for way too long, I get kind of bored of it.
There's some lines in that scene though that I fucking love when he's like, give me hell, and it's like, communications array not functioning. Well, what is functioning? Air conditioning is fully operational.
Yeah,
that's one of my faves.
And I think like that is such a Marvel dialogue line, but it's done really well. Yeah. Like this movie takes a lot of the mainstays of the Marvel and specifically like core Avengers line and just does it the best that a lot of the movies are ever going to get it to do.
Yeah, I think I really appreciate this movie for that because, well, other Marvel movies, including Guardians, will try to be funny and sometimes not succeed. This movie almost doesn't feel like it's trying to be funny, but sometimes it is trying to be funny, and in most cases, it does land for me in this movie, where something like Guardians, which we'll get to, it doesn't always land.
Yeah. And I think with Winter Soldier, they're better at not pausing for laughter, which a lot of Marvel movies do. And it is kind of annoying when the line's just not that funny. Yeah. And then they expect you to laugh there. So they're quiet for a couple seconds.
Yeah.
Keep moving. Like if it's just don't worry about that.
Literally, there's a scene in Infinity War where if you're watching it at home now, it's so awkward. It's where Mantis says to Iron Man, kick names and take ass.
Yeah.
And he just stands there for like a good 10 seconds, rolling his eyes. And if you're watching it at home, it's like, what's happening? Did they, are they not cutting?
did my audio just clip?
Yeah. But like in the theater, when people are laughing, it makes sense. And so like, these movies are definitely built for that theater experience. Sometimes like you experience, you're not going to have as much of a good experience at home.
Mm-hmm.
What works for you in this movie?
I think like the characters are already really fleshed out, so they don't have to waste any time kind of building anything. Like I think they do build on the relationship between Black Widow and Cap really well in this. Like you kind of get a good sense of the full range of them on the first mission, how there's a disagreement, how they're kind of like they're fighting, and you can see like operationally how they work as teammates.
Yeah.
But then that kind of develops into like an actual like friendship and relationship. And even though they kind of tease the will they won't they, you kind of know they won't.
Yeah.
They're not going so deep into it that you actually think there's a chance, but they do make you question the exacts of their relationship, which I think is well done. Plot wise, I do like the plot overall.
Yeah.
They definitely, it's stretched out in the fact that they make a lot of room for action. So there's not that much happening.
Yeah.
And the core tenet is that Captain America finds out that they're, you know, Patriot acting this thing where they just have like a huge, they're trying to create like a police state. He doesn't like that.
Yeah.
Finds out people are co-opting it, stops that. Like it is a pretty small arc with just a lot of stops along the way.
Mm.
But it's not painfully MacGuffin-y. There's a reasonable amount of stops they have to make on the way.
Yeah.
And it's because they do it spy thriller wise, it's still a fun mystery to unravel what's happening.
Yeah.
So I like that quite a bit. It was just that some of it was longer than it needed to be, mm-hmm. and maybe not as gripping as it needed to be. When they go to Peggy and she's in the hospital, stop making them sexy. She's too sexy to be dying. Just let her make her look old. For God's sake, why is she hot? She doesn't need to be hot.
You can't make Hayley Atwell not sexy. It's kind of impossible.
Yeah, well, when I was looking back at it, all they did was they just kept adding wrinkles. It's like yeah, they layered yeah, wrinkle yeah. filters with no other like attempt to make her skin look old.
Yeah. No,
so it man. Was like kind of a weird, I didn't like looking at her because she was A, hot and B, wrinkly. Like she had just spent years in the sauna. It was hard to watch. Oh, man, well, okay. What about it made you love it? Like, where do you think that I am incorrect?
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, I really like the characters in this. Notably, I really like Sam Wilson. Mm-hmm. I like he's the one that was actually introduced in this movie. Whereas a lot of the other characters are kind of in their roles. But Sam Wilson is a really good character.
They and do I introduce him tightly.
Mackie. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I fucking love Anthony Mackie. He's so good in this. Yeah. I don't know. Like he's got just like this suave, confident energy.
Yes.
That like just works so well. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what is it about the fucking Falcon. Yeah. I just love him so much.
You do
much.
Love the Falcon. That might be part of why yeah. it's one of your top villains. Yeah. You love the Falcon.
Yeah, he's really cool. But he's also not just like a comic relief character.
No.
He's like really in there and like helping them and like, you know, actually useful. And he's funny, but like he also is like just a good friend and like it's just like good wingman, you know?
And what I like about him is they introduce a new character, but he's not like their secret weapon that overpowers everything.
Yeah.
He's just a useful team member who assists in the ultimate goals. Mm-hmm. He's not like particular Captain Marvels that come in and are like super OP, so you have to write them out of everything else that happens.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like he's actually at a good level that makes sense for like the level of stakes that are currently happening, which is pre galactic god fighting. Yeah. We're still dealing with just like national security threats.
Yeah, and I love a lot of the action set pieces in this movie. I mean, like, there are very distinct action set pieces that you can point out. Like, you already mentioned the Nick Fury one. That one's, like, kind of the one that I forget about sometimes. Notably, the ones that I really love are the opening one, mm-hmm. when they go and take the Luminian Star. Is that Luminian Star? Luminian is a Pokemon, so that I might be totally off there.
That sounds correct. Like, I was not going to challenge you on that one.
I think it's Limerian.
Limerian Star. Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
When he fucking yeets somebody off the side of the boat, which is a firm kick. I fucking lost it. It's awesome every time. And he's just like running and like pushing people off.
Oh yeah.
So good.
A lot of people die.
Yeah. That's the thing is Cap just kills people.
Yeah.
Like that guy who he kicked into the water, his spine is broken and he's not swimming back to the surface.
No. I kind of forgot how murdery these Avengers are. Because like Black Widow, every time that she's on a mission, there is just like family lines wiped out.
Yeah. Yeah. And I like the Bucky chase. There's one particular bit that I always remember where Cap has to take a hard right and he ends up going into the wall and leaving a fucking shield sized dent into the wall.
That is good.
And then the scene on the bridge where they first meet the Winter Soldier. Or like, I guess they met him in that chase, but like the first kind of conflict within the Winter Soldier and Sam's there and everything, starting when he fucking pulls the steering wheel out of the car.
Yeah,
oh my God.
That's good. Oh, okay. Another thing, this is something that bothers me about just action generals in movie, action movies in general.
Yeah.
Is that villains have guns depending on how close to you they are. If they're far enough that it's just suppressing fire, they're all heavily armed and willing to shoot immediately.
Yeah.
If they're within punching range, they suddenly no longer have a gun to defend themselves with. And it kind of brings me out of a lot of action scenes.
Yeah. If you like actually notice it and sit back and are looking for it. Yeah. I'm sure you could see that.
Yeah. And it's like, it happens a lot in this, but like, I don't know. That is just something in general that John Wick does really well.
Yeah.
And a lot of action movies don't spend the time to make sure that all flows perfectly. So whatever. Yeah.
I mean, like other than Black Widow, a lot of these guys don't use guns. Like Cap uses his shield.
Cap, which is why no one can have a gun close to him because it's immediately going to cancel out his shield.
Yeah.
Oh, just shoot his feet. Like, I don't know how has no one figured that he has 2 feet that are not protected by the shield.
Literally, there's a guy in a fucking with a minigun shooting
time.
Directly at the center of the star.
The whole time he's got feet, buddy. Break his ankles. Come on, deke him out.
Yeah, but All right. Well, did you want to move on into some other stuff? What's the other stuff?
Some reviews, oh, yeah, some criticisms, reviews
and some wrap-ups.
Other things. Yeah, let's do that.
Cool. So it has a 90% critics on Rotten Tomatoes and a 92% audience. IMDb was a 7.8, Metacritic 7D. So, cool. Yeah, pretty high.
That is pretty high. Pretty well received.
And very well received by the public as well, because on a budget of $170 million, it made $714.4 million, landing it at number 7 at the box office that year.
Yeah, good. That's good enough to fund a couple more Hell Carriers.
Well, we'll move right into fun Letterboxd reviews then. On Letterboxd, it has a score of 3.8 out of 5, and a lot of people thought there was just gay energy in this movie.
Probably.
So, like, a lot of the top liked reviews on Letterboxd were just related to that.
Mm-hmm.
Got a few here. All of them, clearly women wanting this to happen, because literally the three names are Andrea, Sophie, and Lily. So, here we go. So, Andrea says, the gay energy that this movie possesses, .. The gayness jumped out. There is not a single straight person in this movie. I don't know.
Sure. Yeah.
Sure.
I mean, there's a lot of really hot people in there. Yeah. So, yeah.
Sophie gave it 4.5 stars. Steve, just a couple of dudes being guys. Bucky, just a couple of guys being dudes. Steve, couple of dudes being gay. Bucky, show me your dick, Steve.
I didn't know Letterboxd was home to such a wide range of fans.
What? 4 stars by Lily. When your ex-boyfriend comes back into your life and starts causing trouble, but you still love him.
Aww, I think that's cute. Your ex, and you think, I don't know. There's a lot of troublesome things in that review. I hope you all work it out.
Well, they all loved it. They did. But I had to go to kind of the bottom of the barrel to get anything other than gayness. Mm-hmm. So a 0.5 star by Janie. I always thought Chris Evans was a short dude. This movie did not help with this impression. For reference, Chris Evans is 6 feet tall.
Yeah, I've never thought he was a short dude. Like, we watched the same movie. Where he does tall guy things of being tall on screen.
Is it just because he's next to other tall people?
I don't know. I don't know. That's weird.
Why? Is it like maybe a confidence thing? Like they just want him to be a short guy for short guy energy? Or?
Maybe he's just so thick that the expected height to width ratio makes you think he's shorter than he is? Maybe?
Maybe.
I don't know.
Right, well, that was it for Letterboxd. I have some Academy Award details, though. It was nominated for 1 Academy Award.
Mm-hmm.
And that was...
Was it editing?
No, visual effects.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Which is interesting, because there was a later fact that I read that I didn't put in, but that they did a lot of this practically.
Yeah, this isn't a movie that really struck me as having, like, standout for the year visual effects.
Yeah.
In a year that had such movies as Dawn of the Planet of the Apes.
Yeah. And Interstellar.
And Interstellar.
Even Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah.
But it didn't win, which I guess kind of makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Criticisms. So it didn't win any Academy Awards. It was nominated for 11 Saturn Awards from the Academy of Science Fiction, Fantasy, and Horror Films. They fucking loved it. It was nominated for Best Supporting Actress, Scarlett Johansson, Best Actor, Chris Evans, Supporting Actor, Samuel L. Jackson, Supporting Actor, Anthony Mackie, Best Writing, Best Directing, Best Production Design, Best Editing, Best Comic to Film Motion Picture, Best Music, and Best Special Effects. Didn't win any of those, though.
Oh, so just the noms, yeah. Not the wins.
I will say the music is very good in this movie as well. I really liked the score in this. But yeah, does any of that surprise you?
No, I didn't expect this to be a movie that got a lot of like technical awards.
No.
I could see like an editing or director probably, but that was kind of what I would expect from it. I'm not shocked that it didn't win anything though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The directors did a really good job, and especially a lot of people were worried because these guys had mostly directed TV before. They were mostly known for Community.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of people were like, oh, like how are these TV directors going to do on this big Marvel movie? And then they went on to direct the biggest movies of all time.
And then this became them after that. Yeah. This is a Russo universe, exactly. Not a Marvel one.
All right, well, I'm going to wrap up here with some interesting facts. Nick Fury relates a story of his grandfather being an elevator operator. In real life, Samuel L. Jackson's grandfather was, in fact, an elevator operator.
Oh, wow. Did he carry a gun around with bags of money?
That was not in the interesting facts, so I'm clear on that. Yes. So I was saying that I was surprised that Robert Redford was in this movie. Apparently he wanted to do the film because his grandchildren were Marvel fans and he wanted them to see him in one. So
imagine having that pull that you can do movies this huge in career making as like a fun thing for your kids. That's yeah. disgusting.
Yeah, Robert Redford probably just pulled up there and before he could even ask what they wanted, they were just saying yes.
Yeah, he just came up and said, I'm in your movie. Hello, I'm Robert Redford. I will be in your movie.
And lastly, Anthony Mackie's appearance in this film fulfilled his dream of playing a Marvel comic book character. He wrote a series of email pleas to Marvel wanting to play any comic book character that would appear on film. The studio repeatedly replied to him that they will respond in due time. Mackie's emails caught the attention of President Kevin Feige, who subsequently offered him the role of Sam Wilson, aka the Falcon. So an interesting dichotomy there. Yeah.
Compare those energies. You have your Chad and you have your simp energy coming in there. And both, ladies and gentlemen, work. Yeah. Do whatever you want. Just shoot your shot. No matter how pathetic and sad it is, you might become the Falcon.
Yeah. Who knows? And the Falcon, you might come up Captain America. So who knows?
Yeah. What an arc. Dang.
Yeah. I love fucking Captain America, Anthony Mackie, yeah. Sam Wilson, Captain America. You didn't watch that show.
Nope, not at all. Costume sounds great.
It's fucking dope.
Yeah.
I have the little figure in the bottom right corner next to Vision.
Oh, he looks amazing.
He's great.
Looks great. Oh, man, if that was in a movie?
Yeah,
wow.
Imagine that.
Ooh, ooh. That in
too movement? Bad it's only in a TV show.
Oh, well, man, I don't care anymore.
All right, well, that wraps up Captain America and the Winter Soldier.
Wow.
Do you want to move on to Guardians of the Galaxy?
Let's get into Guardians of the Galaxy. So, Guardians of the Galaxy is the 10th entry into the Marvel Cinematic Universe. The Guardians of the Galaxy, which is retroactively known as Volume 1 afterwards, but was just released as Guardians of the Galaxy, is directed by James Gunn and was written by James Gunn and Nicole Perlman. Stars Chris Pratt as Star-Lord, Zoe Saldana as Gamora, Dave Bautista as Drax the Destroyer, Vin Diesel as Groot, Bradley Cooper as Rocket, I forget that every single time,
right?
And Lee Pace as Ronan the Accuser. It has a runtime of 121 minutes and was released on August 1st, 2014. Kyle, we've seen this movie a lot. What do you think about it?
It's really good.
It's really good.
I always enjoy rewatching it.
Yeah, that's the thing. Every time that I went to the theater and rewatched it, I had a merry old time. Like, I never went just out of pure wanting to watch it more. I went back because I wanted to see it again. So I was happy to rewatch it. And I still had the same pleasant fuzzies watching it now.
Yeah.
It's a really solid movie. The humor hits. Yeah.
Yeah, it's good.
Less shaky cam. Yeah, it was great. Plot time?
Sure. Give us a plot.
I will not be as quick as you, okay. But I still got this down to a reasonable plot. Following his mother's death, a young Peter Quill is abducted from Earth by a group of alien thieves and smugglers known as the Ravagers, led by Yondu Udonta?
Yep.
Sure. In 2014, on the abandoned planet Morag, Quill steals a mysterious orb, but is attacked by forces of the fanatical Kree renegade Ronan the Accuser and led by Korath. Although Quill escapes with the orb, Yondu discovers his theft and issues a bounty for his capture, while Ronan sends the assassin Gamora after the orb. Gamora ambushes Quill as he tries to sell the orb and steals it. A fight ensues, drawing in a pair of bounty hunters named Rocket and Groot, but the four get captured and locked up in the Kiln prison. An inmate there, Drax the Destroyer, attempts to kill Gamora due to her association with the powerful intergalactic warlord Thanos and Ronan, who killed his family. Quill convinces Drax that Gamora can bring Ronan to him. Learning that Gamora intends to sell the orb to the collector
Tanalir T'Vaan.
Quill, Rocket, Groot, and Drax work with her to escape the Kiln in Quill's ship, the Milano. Quill's group flees to nowhere, a remote lawless outpost in space, where a drunken Drax summons Ronan while the rest of the group meets T'Vaan, the orb's buyer. T'Vaan opens the orb, revealing the Power Stone, as his slave Karina grabs the stone, triggering an explosion that engulfs T'Vaan's archive. Ronan arrives and easily defeats Drax while the others flee by ship, pursued by Ronan's followers and Gamora's adoptive sister Nebula. Nebula destroys Gamora's ship, leaving her floating in space, and Ronan's fighters capture the orb. Quill contacts Yondu before falling Gamora into space, giving her his helmet to survive. Yondu arrives and retrieves the pair. Rocket, Drax, and Groot threaten to attack Yondu's ship to rescue them, but Quill negotiates a truce, promising the orb to Yondu. Quill's group agrees that facing Ronan means certain death, but they cannot let him use the Infinity Stone to destroy the galaxy. The Ravagers and Quill's group join with the Nova Corps to confront Ronan at Xandar, with Quill's group breaching the Dark Aster with the Milano. Ronan uses his empowered Warhammer to destroy the Nova Corps' fleet, but Drax is able to kill Korath, and Gamora defeats Nebula, who escapes, but the group find themselves outmatched by Ronan's power until Rocket crashes a Ravager ship through the Dark Aster. The damaged Aster crash lands on Xandar, with Groot sacrificing himself to shield the group. Ronan emerges from the wreck and prepares to destroy Xandar, but Quill distracts him, allowing Drax and Rocket to destroy Ronan's Warhammer. Quill grabs the freed Infinity Stone, and with Gamora, Drax, and Rocket sharing its burden, they use it to vaporize Ronan. In the aftermath, Quill tricks Yondu into taking a container supposedly containing the stone and gives the real stone to the Nova Corps. As the Ravagers leave Xandar, Yondu remarks that it turned out well that they did not deliver Quill to his father per their contract. Quill's group, now known as the Guardians of the Galaxy, has their criminal records expunged, and Quill learns that he is only half-human, his father being part of an ancient, unknown species. Some other stuff happens that matters for the universe, but not for this movie, so that is the end of that.
Yay.
Yay.
Well, it wasn't as quick.
No.
It's definitely probably more thorough and makes a lot more sense.
People know the movies anyways. Yeah, I could have been like, well, at the start of the movie, Quill's here. At the end of the movie, Quill's over there with four other people. And I was like, oh yeah, I remember that. And then they remember the plot.
With this one, I think, I mean, I love it. It's a great movie. I find that I love the first and third acts, but the second act, kind of like middle area, is like... And I always find it a little bit muddier.
Yes.
Especially when you compare how strong and how quick the first act and the third act move.
Mm-hmm.
Like those two are like, just in my opinion, they're flawless. They're like great.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just that middle area. I don't know if I just don't remember it, and maybe that's why it kind of feels muddy, but like it's, yeah.
I totally agree.
Yeah.
I absolutely agree. I think because you get so many characters introduced at a really good rate that once everyone's there, they don't keep up their adventures at the same level.
Yeah.
Because when you cut to nowhere, that whole scene doesn't accomplish as much as every other scene had before. So it feels slower, even though there's like some decent action going on and other things like that. It's just not as powerful as the rest of the movie is. So it's a bit harder to get into.
It does kind of come to a halt in a sense when they're like, oh, we have to wait for T'Von.
Yeah, they shouldn't have done that.
Yeah.
Because they don't even really wait. They have a couple scenes. You don't need to explain them when, and you can, I don't know, have those conversations elsewhere.
Yeah.
I don't know if they really needed to even have Quill's and Gamora's relationship with that scene of them dancing, because they don't really further anything that much. They tease that something's going to happen. You know it was going to happen anyways, and then it happened. So I feel like you could probably cut that and be good to go anyways.
Yeah. I mean, I do like that scene when they're like listening to the music. It's just like, when you compare it to how quick the rest of the movie is moving, it's just like, it does kind of come to a slow, but that is like the only criticism I really have. The rest of it is like, it's really emotional. And like,
is,
I don't think a lot of people were expecting that going in. And like, even on a rewatch, I do like get caught up in it, even like on the opening scene. And maybe part of that is now retrospective. And, you know, because we've been with Peter Quill for so many years now, you're just to see that kind of reminder of where his beginning was and his mom and like, the child actor in that is really good.
Oh,
like,
absolutely. Yeah, there's a lot of really powerful scenes from actors who you didn't see it coming from when the movie first came out. Dave Bautista barely knew how to be an actor at that point. Like, he wasn't really in the realm. Yeah. And like, Chris Pratt was just like the funny Parks and Rec guy. He wasn't like the star that he is now. So seeing these from at the time also changed a lot, where like, you maybe had lower expectations, but they still deliver on the emotion. Yeah.
I mean, Chris Pratt is fucking Mario now. Like, look how far we've come.
I know. This guy's arc is incredible. From like a fun dopey guy to an Italian fun dopey guy. Really going to the heights. But I think what I love most about this movie is it just comes into its own style.
Mm-hmm.
It has such a specific personalized drip that it does more for like the 80s than the 80s did for the 80s. It is powerful.
Yeah. And this soundtrack was a huge deal.
It was massive. It had a lot of steam behind it.
Mm-hmm. This is like one of the biggest cases of somebody's playlist going huge.
That's the thing too. It's not like, I mean, they do have really good scenes around the songs, and they've built up scenes to work with the music, but you're just taking the hits from the 80s. Like, this isn't, this is just like your your now 80s, 20, top 25 hit CD and you put it, made a movie around it. So it's not like someone really went digging deep to get like these songs.
But I like how they made the music part of the story too. Like it's
a huge
it's,
part.
It's got like a narrative purpose. It's not just, oh, I really like these songs and I want to embed them into the movie. Yeah, that's probably part of it. And maybe part of the story was driven from that. Mm-hmm. But even at the end, when he gets that new mixtape, like that would not hit as hard if they didn't make the music so kind of integral into the movie.
Oh, absolutely. Do you want to move on to some critic stuff?
Sure.
Yeah, let's do that. All right. So take all your scores for Captain America, but make them better. This got a 92 from the critics on Rotten Tomato. It tied for audiences also 92.
Oh, so, wow.
Yeah.
Cool.
But back to being better. IMDb, this got an 8.
Yeah.
And on Metacritic, this got an 80.
Wow.
It also kicked Captain America's ass at the box office, getting $771 million. And it even had a better budget at $232 million. I'm saying better as bigger, not necessarily the case, but I'm going to pretend it is. This was number 3 at the box office, also beating Captain America there. Really, they took no prisoners. Captain America sucks in comparison to that.
Which was cool. Like, it's cool that it did so well and that they were so confident in the movie that to push it to as big as it was, because nobody knew who the Guardians of the Galaxy were except for really hardcore comic book fans before going in. And even that, like, this is not exactly the Guardians of the Galaxy from the comics. So it's kind of its own thing, just inspired by, and they're just like making it its huge thing, especially this early in the cinematic universe. Like, it's, you said the 10th film, we're on 28 now.
I know, that's crazy.
And so like, I do commend them for taking that risk and going so weird with it and making this awesome movie and putting it in the hands of James Gunn.
Yeah.
Who like prior to this, you know, made Slither.
Yeah, like, they kind of went off the board and it worked so well. He was the perfect director for this movie. Mm-hmm.
And I think they've kind of learned from this and from Captain America to kind of trust in some directors that maybe haven't taken a stab at a big blockbuster before.
Yeah.
And there might be an aspect of, hey, we can push you around because the vision of the universe is ultimately driven essentially by the president, Kevin Feige, and the committee that makes these movies happen. But like, they do take a chance on an individual's voice who maybe hasn't been heard on that scale before. Mm-hmm. And I think that's awesome.
Oh, absolutely. And also, this was massive for their careers. Like,
oh,
both the Russo brothers and James Gunn are kind of running around doing whatever they want now.
Yeah.
Well, fun Letterboxd time, right?
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah. This got a 3.8 out of 5 on Letterboxd, so that is actually a tie. This did not get many fun Letterboxd reviews. I went through a lot of pages.
Yeah, what is with the Letterboxd on actually good movies that, like, there's no fun shit?
I don't know. There's just so many that I think the lowest common denominator problem comes in, where just, like, things that the most people find funny aren't really that funny to, like, particular people.
And I found in the lower reviews, people were just like, fuck Marvel.
Yeah.
Like, this is stupid. Put like some like quality. Give me Marty Scorsese movies, please.
Yeah. I went through the low reviews for this movie and it was people committing hate crimes on Chris Pratt.
Oh no.
People really hate Chris Pratt and are willing to take it out on him on any forum. But the two that I found that I thought were worthwhile, 3-4 stars. This takes me back to when I still liked Chris Pratt. So we didn't quite get away from the Chris Pratt hate because I was still, but that was a fun take on it. Lily, 4.5 stars. Rocket Raccoon, my little meow meow.
What the fuck?
I don't know. I thought that was great. For awards, this was nominated for 2 Academy Awards, one more than Captain America, won the same amount at 0. It was nominated for Best Makeup and Hairstyling.
Yeah, that makes
and
sense.
Best Special Visual Effects.
Yeah, I was going to say the makeup and prosthetics that they did for a lot of these characters, even just side characters, like even background characters, really good.
Yeah, the Xandarians all looked super cool.
Yeah, I mean, like, look at what they made John C. Reilly look like.
Yeah.
Total goof.
They made a... You almost couldn't tell. No, I'm kidding. Yeah. You knew exactly who it was. You can't hide John C. Reilly. For other notable awards, this also had a lot of traction at the Saturn Awards for nerds. This got nominations for Best Director, Actor, and Makeup. It won Best Director, Best Actor, and won Best Makeup. This also won the Critics' Choice Award for Best Action Movie and was a Grammy-nominated soundtrack.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, the soundtrack would also top the Billboard Top 200 that year.
That's wild.
Ooh, that's big.
Mm-hmm.
For interesting facts, this will make up for a pretty light Letterboxd section because there was some fun stuff going on. James Gunn stated that Chris Pratt's audition was so good, he was prepared to offer him the role even if Chris Pratt did not lose the weight or get in any kind of shape. Gunn joked that he was willing to CGI a six-pack on Pratt's body. However, Pratt asked Gunn to give him 6 months to lose 50 pounds, and he ended up losing 60.
Wow.
Vin Diesel recorded all his lines in several different languages, including Russian, Mandarin, Spanish, Portuguese, German, and French.
Wow.
So they could use his real voice in the film around the world.
I'm surprised he didn't sneak in a We Are Family.
That's a pretty impressive stat, but you have to remember that he had four words and one of them was a proper noun. You don't need to translate Groot. So I'm sure we could all learn how to pronounce that one sentence in those languages in a pretty short amount of time.
Yeah.
But still good for Vin Diesel. Bradley Cooper was paid more for voicing Rocket in this movie than for starring in Silver Linings Playbook and The Hangover combined.
Have you ever seen a behind the scenes of him recording?
I don't know if I want to.
It's really fun. It's really funny.
The immersion breaking nature. That's incredible. But he also does a really good job because I keep forgetting it's Bradley Cooper.
Yeah. It is strange to think that Bradley Cooper, Academy Award nominated Bradley Cooper. Has he won?
I don't know.
Whatever. He's at least been nominated.
At least.
Is it in this goofy ass space movie and then also in Endgame alongside of all of those mega stars?
Yeah.
It's so easy to forget. But because he does a whole different voice. I mean, if you listen, you can hear Bradley Cooper in there.
Mm-hmm. It's the kind of thing where if you go looking for Bradley Cooper, you're going to find him. Yeah. But if you don't think about it, you probably won't hear it right away.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a pretty good spot to be at.
Mm-hmm.
It took the makeup artist 5 hours daily to do makeup and apply 18 prosthetic tattoo pieces onto Dave Bautista. Chris Pratt revealed that during the process, Bautista stood the entire time with hands holding onto rails, which had tennis balls on them, with no complaints whatsoever. Eventually, the process was narrowed down to an average of 3 hours, while 90 minutes were required to remove all the makeup.
Wow.
Yeah. And last one, this is a big one. The cassette player used by Peter Quill was the Sony TPS L2. It was the first personal cassette player released in 1979. It was originally called the Soundabout, then changed to the Walkman.
Cool.
Yeah.
I like Soundabout.
Soundabout is pretty cool.
Soundabout, right.
But the Walkman kind of gets the picture across. Because before, walking and listening was unheard of. You had to pause for conversations. The Walkman trained the human race to get that down to an art, though. Well, do we want to get into some scoring?
Yes. We're going to do now our scores for both films. I have mine ready if you are wanting to hear them.
Oh, I would love to hear them.
So I'll start with Captain America. I gave enjoyment a 5. I fucking love this movie. So that's pretty much my explanation.
You don't need to defend yourself. No, you can't.
I'm kidding. Craft, 4.5. Thought it was very strong. I really liked it.
this is an elementary school show and tell. This is my pet. I like him. This is another picture. I like him.
Execution, I also gave a 4.5. Thought it was very well written. And the actors are really good at it. Yep. Rewatchability, this one's a 5 for me. I can watch this one anytime.
And you pretty much have.
Yes.
You backed that up with definitely. Facts.
Do you want to give your Captain America scores?
Yeah, let's go into my Captain America scores. For enjoyment, I've given this a 3. It was enjoyable. It was
Jesus, this fucking guy.
It was a good action movie. Yep. For craft, I was a little harsh on this one. I gave it a 2.5. Before you fight me with your fist, I will say this was such a Marvel movie recorded on a soundstage. Some of the CGI only aged kind of fine, and having seen Dawn of the Planets of the Apes recently enough, I know they could have done better.
Yeah, okay, sure.
So yeah,
you're entitled to your wrong opinion.
I'm holding to 2.5. For execution, I gave it a 3. I thought it was good, but this is just a really good execution of the same Marvel formula that we've seen 8 times in a row. So I don't know, they were not going Ham. Yep, and for rewatchability, I gave it a 2. I'm kind of done watching this movie. So we're really, tanking our average score.
Oh my God. Fuck. All right, let's move on to Guardians.
Let's do Guardians of the Galaxy. Kyle, you go first.
My enjoyment was a 5. Mm-hmm. I love watching this movie. Can't stop me. Kraft, 4.5. Also very strong. Good costumes. Good mm-hmm. score. Love it. Execution, also 4.5. Mm-hmm. Good movie.
I like it.
Rewatchability. I think this was just when I was comparing the two, I was like, which one would I want to rewatch more? It was Winter Soldier. So this is 4.5.
Yeah, that's still really
still high.
Yeah,
that's
still good. You've liked this movie, and that's I think that's good and a mm-hmm. fair thing to do. For enjoyment, I gave this a 4. I like it quite a bit. Not a 5 though. For craft, I gave this a 3.5. For execution, I gave this a 3.5. And for rewatchability, I give this 3. I've also kind of wrapped up the Guardians of the Galaxy portion of my life. Huh? I think a lot of my scores were kind of Marvel burnout.
Mm.
I'm out of it. Like
that's fair. Yeah.
I haven't watched all of them. I'm probably not going to watch Doctor Strange because there's too much to catch up on. So coming back to these movies, I will say they have been tainted by Marvel burnout.
Okay, that's fair.
I think also these scores were tainted by the fact that I saw that like Doctor Strange and all the show times it has in every theater.
Oh my God, I saw that.
It just made me, there was a moment of sadness when I saw that it has showings every 17 minutes across the world. There will be a new, probably less than that, probably literally every 5 minutes, yeah. A new showing of Doctor Strange has started.
Jason Miller in the Showtimes of Sadness. All right, let's ranking. Land these in the rankings.
All right, Kyle, you give me your ranking. I already slotted mine in.
Okay.
You let me know where you want yours put in.
It's pretty easy for you to block in because they're together.
Nice. That makes it easier.
At number 2, Captain America. At number 3, Guardians. Pushing Dawn of the Planet of the Apes down to 4, but not beating Grand Budapest Hotel.
Well, how do you beat the Grand Budapest Hotel? All right. I have put mine significantly lower, but still in good spots.
Yep.
Guardians of the Galaxy is going to come in higher. It is going to be my number 7 below John Wick and above Lego. Cap Am Win Soul, as I've written it out, is going to be number 10 above Boyhood, below the Babadook.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Weird.
I stand by that.
Yeah, no, yep. It's fine. Yeah. No, I had a feeling we were going to just blatantly disagree in some regard here.
Yeah.
This is a little bit of a bias on my end, I will
admit.
And
that's okay. We're not, these aren't objective rankings. These are how they make us feel.
And they make me feel happy and good.
I'm glad.
Yes.
I'm happy for you. These make me feel about a 7 and 10 out of my 2014 season rankings so far.
Here's the thing though. There's still more on the horizon. And I think these are going to get pushed down.
Mm-hmm. I feel like these are going to hover out where they are.
Yeah.
I think when I was putting these in, I felt like this is going to be like a pillar of where these positions are going to lock in and movies are going to move around them.
Mm-hmm. This season, like we started and it was kind of like a couple of them were popping in that were like not so good.
Mm-hmm.
And at the start of the season, we're like, oh, this is a fucking, this is
like
a year.
Banger,
this is a
banger.
Fucking year.
Yeah.
But like a couple of them popped in. Now, I think from here on out, it's just banger after banger after banger after banger.
I'm excited.
It's going to get deadly. So, except for maybe some of the other nominees.
That's strange.
It's weird.
But I guess that makes sense because that's sometimes how the Academy just happens to go.
Yeah. But should we wrap up?
I think we should wrap it up.
All right. Well, I want to thank you all for listening to this big old mid-season Marvel episode of season 2. That was episode 14 of Snubs and Dubs. As always, you can find us everywhere on social media at Snubs and Dubs. That's on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, Letterboxd, etc. We're also on Good Pod, so make sure to check us out there and join our official Discord. We'd love to hear guys' thoughts on these films or on this episode. So please send us a tweet or a message with a question, recommendation, or anything else. I'm also at Kyle Tobiasen on Twitter, and Jason is at Wendy_Mills. Of course, all of those links are going to be in the show notes. Make sure to leave a 5-star review, share the show to everyone you know, and check back next week for another episode. Here's a sneak peek of the film we're going to talk about.
Stranger danger. Keep your eyes down. There's some sort of bear.
Hello.
Hello there.
Mary.
This young bear needs our help, Henry. It's just for one night.
Do bears even have names?
My name is...
Or perhaps you'd like an English name.
An English name?
Paddington.
Paddington.
That's right. Next time we're talking about Paddington. So make sure to watch it before next episode. Can't wait for you guys to hear it. Thanks for listening. That's a wrap. Bye.
Bye for now.